Hello, everybody. My talk is titled Religion, Evolution's Ally or Enemy? So let me start by asking, what are we going to do with this thing called religion? Around 200 or 300 years ago, the percentage of people in, for example, Northern Europe, who considered themselves churched, that is, serious and regular followers of a traditional church, in this case, the Catholic Church, was well over 90%. Today, the percentage of people in Northern Europe who consider themselves churched is less than 11%. The number of people who are followers of any sort of traditional religion has dropped dramatically, especially in the modern developed countries. In the pre-modern or developing countries, the numbers of religious believers are much higher. And as we'll see, there's a reason for that. But in general, and this is the central point, the more evolved a country is, the less religious it is. And this is true for individuals as well. The more evolved a person is, the less religious they're likely to be. Why is that? Are religion and evolution the opposite of each other? So that the more you have of one, the less you have of the other? Is religion an ally of evolution or its enemy? First of all, we need to understand what we mean by the word religion. There are at least two very different meanings of that word. One meaning is called religious intelligence or spiritual intelligence. It's how we think about spirit. How we think about what we believe is an ultimate reality or ultimate concern. It's how we interpret or conceptualize or think about ultimate reality. The other meaning is not spiritual intelligence, but direct spiritual experience or immediate religious experience. Human beings have both capacities, spiritual intelligence, and spiritual experience. In certain instances, like listening to beautiful music, walking in nature, making love, having a peak experience or an altered state of consciousness, humans can have a direct spiritual experience. William James explored these direct spiritual experiences in his classic book, The Varieties of Religious Experience. But even if we have a direct spiritual experience, we almost always start interpreting it, conceptualizing it, giving it some sort of meaning, or using some sort of conceptual framework, however simple, to make sense of it. So as soon as we have any direct religious or spiritual experience, we use our spiritual intelligence to interpret it, conceptualize it, frame it. We have spiritual experience and we have spiritual intelligence. Sometimes people have not had any direct spiritual experience, but they have lots of ideas and thoughts about what spirit is or what they think spirit is like. Most people have some sort of idea of what an ultimate reality is like, or at least what the most important reality or ultimate concern is for themselves. In other words, they have some form of spiritual intelligence, however vague or crude, but they have no direct spiritual experience. Some of these people even have a very advanced spiritual intelligence. They've read texts from all the world's great religions. They know all sorts of theological theories and ideas. They thought a great deal about spirit and ultimate reality. They might even have tried to weave together all of the latest leading edge versions of modern science into a new paradigm, and then claim that this new paradigm represents a mystical interwoven unity of all reality, just like Zen or Taoism or Vedanta says. And yet, even though they believe this theory, they themselves have never actually had a genuine spiritual experience in their life. So when it comes to spiritual reality, they have lots of knowledge by description or spiritual intelligence, but no direct knowledge by acquaintance or direct spiritual experience or satori or enlightenment. On the other hand, others have had a great deal of spiritual experience, or several of them, but they can't articulate it well or show how it relates to all the other areas of life. They have much spiritual experience, but not much spiritual intelligence. These two forms of religious engagement, spiritual intelligence and spiritual experience, are very different in their fundamental nature. And recognizing that difference is truly important, as we'll see. These two forms cannot be completely separated from each other, but they are different in several important ways. And it's crucial to recognize that difference. Spiritual experience, in its highest form, is claimed by its adherents to be a direct and immediate experience of pure oneness with an ultimate reality. This experience itself has been known in almost every major culture throughout history and around the world, and given names such as enlightenment, awakening, metamorphosis, satori, moksha, fana, the great liberation. And this is said to result in states described as ultimate unity consciousness, divine oneness, pure unity, infinite wholeness, or the supreme identity. Supreme because it is said to be one with spirit, and thus one with the entire universe. And this oneness is said to constitute a person's real self or true self. For the moment, simply assuming that something like this ultimate religious experience exists, I refer to this overall process in any of its forms as waking up. Waking up is the ultimate form of spiritual experience. Spiritual intelligence, on the other hand, is one of up to a dozen multiple intelligences that all human beings possess. That is, in addition to cognitive intelligence, we have emotional intelligence, moral intelligence, aesthetic intelligence, linguistic intelligence, interpersonal intelligence, and yes, spiritual intelligence. These are not so much experiences as they are intelligences, that is, mental operations that address fundamental questions faced by humans. Emotional intelligence, for example, addresses the issue of what are you or I feeling? Moral intelligence addresses the question, what is the right thing to do? And spiritual intelligence is the thinking process that humans engage whenever they think about some sort of ultimate reality or ultimate concern. A person might use their spiritual intelligence and decide that there really isn't any spirit or ultimate reality. They're atheistic. Or they might conclude that they just can't decide that issue. They're agnostic. Or, as I said, they might look at today's leading-edge sciences and come up with a new paradigm about a fully interwoven and unified nature. In any of those cases, they're using their spiritual intelligence because they're thinking about ultimate realities. Now, like all multiple intelligences, spiritual intelligence grows and develops through a well-known sequence of developmental stages. People aren't born with any of their multiple intelligences operating at their highest and most mature levels. Like all things in nature, any multiple intelligence has to grow and develop through a series of stages, each stage being more functional, more complex, and more mature. The same is definitely true of spiritual intelligence. So what stages does spiritual intelligence grow through? What stages are there? What stages do all people develop through their spiritual intelligence, even if they end up deciding they're an atheist? Well, these stages in the various multiple intelligences have been given a huge number of different names by the different researchers who first studied them. Some names are more cognitive, like Piaget. Some are more moral, like Kohlberg. Some are more motivational, like Maslow. James Fowler gave perhaps the most specific and appropriate names to the stages that spiritual intelligence itself goes through, since he was the first researcher to fully discover and describe around six major stages involved in spiritual intelligence. And I use these terms for technical presentations, but here I'm going to use a variation on the names of worldview development first given by Gene Gebser, simply because they're simpler. So one version of the major stages that spiritual intelligence grows and develops through are the archaic stage, to the magic stage, to the mythic stage, the rational stage, the pluralistic or relativistic stage, and the integral stages, with higher stages coming in the future. Any specific religious system anywhere will be primarily at one of those major stages of spiritual intelligence. This overall sequence of development I call not waking up, but growing up. And every multiple intelligence goes through a similar set of stages or levels in its own development or its own growing up. But the very stages of growing up are quite difficult to spot. And in fact, they weren't really discovered until only around 100 years ago. This was much too recent to be included in any of the world's great religions, since almost all of those are over 1,000 years old. So many of the world's religions have, or at least had at some point, a direct access to waking up. Usually the founders of the religion had a profound waking up, and they often based their religion on that waking up experience. However, although all of them were also at a specific stage of growing up in their own spiritual intelligence, not one of them knew about those stages of growing up or knew what stage they themselves were at. These stages had not been discovered yet and were literally unknown around the world, just as how to build a Jeep or perform a kidney transplant were totally unknown. So the great religions around the world usually had waking up, but not one of them was aware of growing up. And this was a disaster, as we'll see. So, having laid out these basics, we can now state the two major problems with Western religion in today's world. One, Christianity started with a great deal of emphasis on waking up. When St. Paul said, "Let this consciousness be in you, which was in Jesus Christ, that we all may be one," the early Christians usually had that direct spiritual experience of oneness. They called this waking up experience metamorphosis or profound transformation. And that profound spiritual experience is what defined most of early Christianity. But by the third and fourth centuries, it had abandoned most forms of waking up and actually started considering waking up itself to be fairly dangerous and certainly not recommended. And this was largely because these mystical experiences of unity could not be controlled by the church. And thus they were increasingly rejected. So that's the first problem with today's Western religion. It mostly lacks any real waking up. The second problem is that, although Christianity itself was mostly at the mythic stage of its own development when it began to become popular, that is, it was at the mythic stage of the overall sequence from archaic to magic to mythic to rational to pluralistic to integral. But it had no understanding of these growing up stages, and thus it could not see that its own stage, the mythic stage, was a relatively low stage or low level of growing up, and that there were actually higher developmental stages of its own religion that were possible. That is, higher stages of its own spiritual intelligence. Fowler actually called this mythic stage the, quote, mythic literal stage, because the myths and the entire Bible itself were taken to be absolutely and literally true. Moses really did part the Red Sea. Lot's wife really was turned into a pillar of salt. Jesus really was born of a biological virgin. Noah really did put two of all animals into an ark, and so on. The church, for the most part, became fixated to this mythic literal stage of spiritual intelligence development. It made the myths dogmatic and demanded that people believe them literally if they wanted any salvation at all. This would have been okay if, when the higher stages of modern rationality and then postmodern pluralism and then systemic integralism emerged, the church also allowed its spiritual intelligence to evolve to those higher stages as well. But for the most part, it did not. It had made the mythic level dogmatic. If you didn't believe the myths literally, you'd burn in hell forever. Thus, when rational science emerged at the next major stage with the Western Enlightenment, the church didn't also adopt a rational spiritual intelligence. It dug its heels in at the mythic stage. And so an idiotic battle of religion versus science sprang into existence. And this battle has remained a huge problem ever since. Instead of seeing that there are religious and scientific approaches at every level of development, religion isn't inherently stuck at mythic and science at rational. There is magic science and religion, mythic science and religion, rational science and religion, pluralistic science and religion, and integral science and religion, and so on. So here's the point. As cultural evolution continued from mythic to rational to pluralistic to beginning integral, religion in the West, instead of following that evolving trend, as did all the other human disciplines and multiple intelligences, instead dug its dogmatic heels into the mythic stage and stayed stuck at that level. Thus, the more that people themselves continue to evolve upwards with culture into rational and pluralistic and integral, the more and more that people increasingly saw typical religion as childish and completely unbelievable, which in this case, it definitely was. And thus, starting at this point, the more evolved a person was, the less religious they were. And religion was no longer an ally of evolution. It became an enemy of evolution. And thus, the two major problems with today's religion in the West is that it has virtually no waking up in spiritual experience, and it only has very low levels of growing up in spiritual intelligence. In short, no waking up, very low growing up. And that is exactly why less than 11% of Northern Europeans want anything to do with that belief system. Who can blame them? And this is precisely why in Western societies, the more evolved a person is, the less religious they tend to be. Religion is not an ally of evolution. It is a preventer of evolution. Something is obviously very, very wrong with this arrangement. But a religion of no waking up and very low growing up silently crept into Western culture at large. And these massive deficits have directly contributed to and helped to drive the widespread culture wars that today are indeed threatening the existence of Europe and Western culture in general. With the Western Enlightenment and the emergence of the rational level of growing up on a fairly widespread scale, the death of God was loudly announced, which actually meant that there had occurred the death of the mythic God, the God or the spiritual intelligence of the mythic level. Spiritual intelligence itself, or the possibilities of spiritual intelligence, like all the other multiple intelligences, actually continue to evolve. But religion, by remaining fixated at the mythic stage, was left behind as cultural evolution continued its inexorable unfolding. The leading edge of culture had evolved from mythic traditional to modern rational, and it then unfolded from modern rational to postmodern pluralistic relativism starting in the 1960s, and it now stands on the brink of a major revolution from postmodern pluralistic relativism to a genuine integral age. But we'll come back to that later. This new postmodern era was strongly announced by the student riots in Paris, May 1968, and a leading edge of Western culture remained faithful to the attitude of these postmodern student rioters. It became a common cultural belief in today's postmodern era that Western culture is a disaster for the entire world, that Western culture is the source of all oppression, all victimization, all marginalization, all racism, and all sexism. All of the world's serious problems will be solved when Western culture is finally destroyed. And what is required instead, this stage announced, is a multiculturalism that values equally each and every culture in the world, which is a critique that oddly overlooks the fact that the belief in multiculturalism itself is found only in Western culture. No other culture anywhere in the world believes in multiculturalism except postmodern Western culture. But this multicultural belief is now taught at virtually every major Western university in existence. One slight exception is that Eastern European cultures, Poland and Hungary, for instance, still tend to almost fully embrace the depth and value of Western culture, whereas Western Europe, from Germany to France to Sweden to Britain, largely embraced the postmodern deconstruction of the West. And they are therefore thoroughly drenched in a massive guilt shared with elites in America. And this is a guilt driven exactly by this belief that Western culture is the source of all oppression in the world. Of course, what actually introduced almost all oppression wherever it appears anywhere in the world is the mythic, ethnocentric, absolutistic stage of human development, or the amber stage of cultural growing up. Wherever that stage emerged anywhere in the world, in China, in the Islamic Empire of the Middle Ages, in various African tribes, it was marked by a violent conquest and oppression of any other culture than its own. The Muslim slave trade was enormous, dwarfing that of the European. And it was only where the world-centric rational stage emerged from the ethnocentric mythic stage that oppression itself was actually opposed and usually overcome in most forms. Thus, it was only the modern, rational, Western culture that finally put an end to slavery. In a 100-year period from around 1770 to 1870, slavery was outlawed in every modern, rational, industrial, Western nation on the planet. The first time anything like that appeared anywhere in history. Even the original indigenous tribes had slavery. The American Indians took their slaves with them on the Trail of Tears. And liberational movements like feminism arose only in modern Western cultures. Again, Western culture was the only major source of these movements like abolition and feminism anywhere on the planet. We in the West would do well to remember this while we go about tearing down our culture faster than you can say deconstruction. It was the West which first evolved to the pluralistic relativism of the postmodern green stage of growing up that actually introduced all of the values of multiculturalism, which include inclusivity, diversity, and non-marginalization. These are deeply Western products appearing nowhere else on the planet, all of which the postmodernists completely overlook as they continue to trash all things Western. Of course, we can and should be critical of today's culture, but only from the next higher stage of cultural evolution itself, that is the integral or systemic holistic stage, and not by celebrating an extremist form of the postmodern relativistic stage that's caught in self-contradictions everywhere it turns. As we just saw, the postmodern pluralistic values of inclusivity and diversity and multiculturalism only emerge at the pluralistic stage of development. A person has to have developed from archaic to magic to mythic to rational to pluralistic before they will even find these postmodern values attractive at all. And yet the postmodernists completely attack and deny any form of hierarchy. They attack not only dominator hierarchies, which are indeed evil, but they also attack the growth hierarchies or evolutionary hierarchies that involve the very process of growing up that produces the postmodern values in the first place. But all of that is deconstructed. And this leads its followers, that is, at least today's Western culture, completely stuck without any authentic value system at all. By default, nihilism and narcissism, that postmodern tag team from hell, step into the void. And then all we have left is the strange death of Europe, as Douglas Murray's book title puts it, The Strange Death of Europe. Just how serious the situation is becomes obvious when you realize that precisely when the cultural leading edge of postmodernism has totally failed to provide any real meaning or significance or unity or solidarity for the people of Europe and the West in general, as citizens anxiously look around for something to fill that meaning void, they can no longer count on traditional religion to help them out. Postmodernism destroys meaning, and religion can no longer replace it. Virtually all of the evolved people in the West have already abandoned traditional religion anyway, as we've seen. They abandoned traditional mythic literal religion and embraced postmodernism's multiculturalism, only to realize that the extreme emphasis on multiculturalism ends up doing nothing but pushing people to regress through massive tribalism, through a jagged identity politics. With identity politics, you are only allowed to identify not with anything you have in common with somebody else, but only with your own isolated tribe. You're allowed to identify with this race or that race, this sex or that sex, this skin color or that skin color, this ethnic group or that ethnic group, but never what you all share or have in common. Thus, postmodern multiculturalism as an actual social organizing principle simply does not work. Multiculturalism is, in essence, a very good thing, and we want to embrace it. But for it to actually work, it must rest on a deeper underlying principle that actually unites the many different tribes and effectively holds them together. The whole point of an organizing principle is that everybody it organizes has to find value in it. And yet multiculturalism, as defined by postmodern identity politics, is nothing but a multi-tribal celebration. It values only how each tribe differs from the others, not what they all share. Thus, especially with the migration crisis in Europe, multiculturalism collapsed with the rest of postmodernism into a massive nihilism and narcissism, resulting in nothing but a major cultural fragmentation that is accelerating right now as we speak. Western culture today is increasingly headed towards this widespread fragmentation, driven by the lack of any universally believable values and instead drowning in postmodern relativism with its nihilism and narcissism. And the strange death of Europe is indeed upon us. So what exactly are we to do? At least two things need to be addressed, and they relate directly to the two major deficits in our religious systems. Religion or spirituality at any level of development is what creates meaning or significance for the person. When Star Trek fans say logic is Spock's religion, that's what they mean, that logic is what gives Spock's life meaning. Likewise, using the term in this way, we would say that secular humanism became the religion of many people during the Enlightenment. In other words, using religion in this sense, religion is the fundamental meaning aspect of existence that is created by the spiritual intelligence found at each stage of growing up. There is magic religion, like voodoo or santeri. There is mythic religion, like Christian or Islamic fundamentalism. There's rational religion, like scientific materialism, which is believed in like a religion, or the new paradigm, which is based on scientific materialism. There is pluralistic religion, for example, a zealous belief in multiculturalism, or things like social or green Buddhism. And there is integral religion, which is aware of each of those levels of religion and integrates all of them in a bigger picture, which also includes science. So what we have overall is that today's West is in a huge culture war between the values of the old religion coming from the amber mythic level versus reductionistic scientific materialism coming from the orange rational modern level versus a rampant relativism coming from the green pluralistic postmodern level. These are the contours of today's Western culture. We have a mythic religion or a scientific materialism or a postmodern relativism. These are all the average citizen has for creating any sort of meaning or significance in their lives. And it's precisely because not one of those value systems is believable anymore that we have the strange death of Europe at our doorstep. Literally, the only way out of this mess is through a continuing evolution from the relativistic stage to the integral stage of growing up. Right now, around 25% of Western culture is at the pluralistic, relativistic stage. But that is the highest stage of most educated individuals and thus most of sophisticated culture in today's West comes from this stage of pluralistic relativism with its rampant nihilism and narcissism. Only around 5% of the population is at any of the integral stages of development. But there's some good news in all this. History suggests that when around 10% of the population reaches the leading edge of evolution, then there's a type of tipping point, and the values of the leading edge tend to permeate or seep through the culture at large. So we can expect to see a major and profound cultural revolution when just 10% of the population reaches the first integral stage, which we call teal. One of the major things that an integral stage of growing up is capable of doing is integrating all of the previous stages, which is why many developmentalists call this stage integrated or holistic or systemic or integral and so on. The more that integral values begin to permeate the culture, the less attraction there will be for mythic religion, scientific materialism, or postmodern relativism. This means that Western culture will have an actual center of self-organization that pulls society together once again and helps integrate it instead of pulling it apart in aggressive culture wars and rampant tribalism and fragmenting identity politics. Because culture is upstream from politics, to continue these culture wars will be to continue numerous political wars. And in many cases around the world, this will mean actual physical wars as well, particularly among those cultures that are just coming up and passing through the tribal magic stages of development, as well as those cultures in their mythic ethnocentric stages of development, where they almost always have some form of mythic literal fundamentalist religion. But once the world reaches the 10% tipping point at an integral stage of growing up, then the first stage of an authentic global civilization will start to emerge, which will include a relatively effective world federation of one sort or another. And the second major step will be taken when over 25% of the population reaches an integral stage. This will be a large enough group of people to start to have a worldwide effect similar to what the postmodern stage now has in the world at large. At this point, there will be virtually no aspect of human existence that does not have some sort of integral version available. And this will change history in a way more profound than anything we have yet seen anywhere in the world. And one thing that will change fundamentally is that the core of spirituality will be realized to be not simply a mental or intellectual belief system, whether offered by mythic dogma or offered by some sort of new paradigm based on materialistic science, but rather consists of practices that help people to genuinely wake up, to awaken to their own timeless and eternal, spaceless and infinite ground of being. The great traditions always distinguish between what they called relative truth and ultimate truth. Relative truth is truth offered by, for example, the natural sciences, physics, chemistry, biology, sociology, and so on. Any truth that relates to the manifest finite universe was considered a relative truth. These types of truths always need to be included in any comprehensive approach to reality. But then there's also ultimate truth. And this refers not to any relative thing or event, or systems or groups of those relative things, but to the timeless and eternal ground of all of them. Only through effective spiritual practices of waking up can ultimate truth be realized. And this is a crucial aspect of spirituality that the West so desperately needs. How could a culture exist that had access only to relative truth and no access to ultimate truth? How could its members find any sort of ultimate meaning or significance in their lives? And the answer is, it couldn't and they can't. This lack of access to ultimate truth is perhaps the greatest cultural deficit that the West faces. The introduction of effective means of waking up is the one item that will make religion or spirituality attractive to educated and evolved people. But only if this waking up is experienced and interpreted from an integral level of growing up. And if this is introduced, we can expect to see the percentage of the population that's drawn to such an integral spirituality start to increase from its present 11% to 20% or 30% or higher. What's even more significant is that the influence that this integrally awakened population will start to have on the culture at large will be staggering. Most significantly, religion would return to being the very leading edge of evolution itself, and evolution's greatest ally. The leading edge of culture would be the brightest light from both waking up and growing up, as well as including both showing up and cleaning up, an idea for another talk. But the point here is that with truly integral spirituality, evolution would have found the greatest ally it's ever seen. This would be a real heaven on earth and replace the hell on earth that too many humans are enduring now. Integral meta theory addresses all of these issues, including ways to both increase spiritual intelligence to ever higher levels of growing up, and ways to ground all of it in a genuine realization of waking up. It does many other things as well, of course, but it definitely addresses this dual deficit of Western religion that has damned our culture for ages. As we move into the coming future, there will be major and profound transformations in many areas, technological, economic, educational, cultural. Integral versions of each of those will be a mark of the future. But these two major changes in both growing up and waking up will especially define the religion of tomorrow. And if not, then religion as a distinct area of human activity will simply cease to exist. And humankind on the whole will lose all access to ultimate truth, which would be a disaster of infinite proportions. Integral meta theory is now addressing each of these major areas along with many, many other items. So I'd like to welcome all of you to this year's Integral European Conference. And if you take one point away from this talk, please take this point. If we don't actually end up seeing the strange death of Europe, it will be because of the work that all of you here are doing. So I'd like to thank each and every one of you and wish you all the very, very best. Thank you. This is Ken.